Good afternoon and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Colby Martin, coming to you live from Studio B in USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Tamilara Odunsi. It's March 8th. On today's show, highlighting the USC Women's Conference and female empowerment, uncovering the meaning behind the letter Z, and what are USC students doing for spring break? All that and more from where we are. Now, here are the news headlines by Sydnia Zirfia.
This hour, Governor Gavin Newsom is delivering the State of the State address. The governor has not tipped beforehand what his speech will be about, but 2 years ago, Newsom dedicated his entire speech to combating the issue of homelessness. Last year, he spoke at Dodger Stadium while in the midst of efforts to recall him. According to a UC Berkeley poll, 66% of Californians say he is doing poorly on homelessness, an increase in double digits from 2 years ago. President Biden announced today the banning of Russian energy imports, including oil, natural gas, and coal, in order to hurt the Russian economy. Already, Americans are noticing higher gas prices at home, and those commuting to work or their college may feel the financial strain more and more as they travel. McDonald's announced that they are temporarily closing down in Russia. There are approximately 847 McDonald's operating in Russia, generating 9% of the company's total revenue and providing 62,000 Russians with work, not including Russian suppliers and partners. McDonald's is the latest company to halt operations in Russia, joining the likes of Visa, MasterCard, Disney, and Sony. From Annenberg Media, I'm Sydney Zafira.
Joined by USC President Carol Folt and Dean of USC Annenberg Willow Bay, the USC Women's Conference marks the celebration of Women's History Month on campus. Lutian Wang has the story.
For the first time in its history, USC Women's Conference went ahead both in person and virtually this year. Corey Welsh, a USC alumni who graduated in 2011 and helped plan this event as a part of the planning committee, said the event was to involve women globally.
Basically, the purpose of the conference is to bring women together and build community psychological safety to learn from each other. So it was really important that we do it both virtually and on campus so that anyone who wants to attend could feel included or feel like they belong, because not everyone is able to travel. Not everyone is comfortable coming to an event in person because of the pandemic constraints.
Not just for getting women together face to face. The conference, Welsh said, was an opportunity for women to share and extend knowledge and a community across the world.
I think that one of the goals is for the conference to encourage women to tap into their Trojan network and get involved, both for themselves and their own, you know, advantages of the community, but also to pay it forward, because we have so much privilege from having attended USC. The conference is an opportunity to give back or get inspired to give back.
All of the speakers at the conference have a background within the USC community. And speaking of giving back, Elise Garcia, a USC alumni who founded her company out of her dorm room at USC, was one of the speakers talking about the science of well-being through the lens of relationships.
I'm going to take a closer look at, you know, how the importance of relationships and how to connect on a deeper level, especially now that we're coming out of a pandemic and connecting now more in person.
The conference's in-person aspect has drawn many alumni to come back on campus and connect with other members in the community. Olivia Heinley graduated from Annenberg in 2013 and is now working as the coordinating producer at the TMZ news desk, said she was excited to be back on campus and couldn't wait to meet new friends.
I have just been feeling like I haven't spent enough time at USC as an alumni, and what hooked me was probably the networking aspect of it. I want to grow a stronger community of USC alumni in my circle, and especially women.
Kicking off at 8:30 this morning, The event covered from collecting various women's professional clothing items for nonprofits to panel discussions and Q&As, where audiences spoke with outstanding women leaders. The message of the day? As President Folt said, learn to tell people to be gracious while being firm. Learn to deal with the nuance of what leadership looks like. For Annenberg Media, I'm Lutien Nguyen.
Much is still left to be known about an odd new symbol plaguing the newfound Russian front. Matthew Andrade has the story.
In the midst of the Russian war against Ukraine, an ominous new symbol has come out of the Federation. The symbol is simply the letter Z. The symbol has been plastered all over Russian tanks, parks, cars, buildings, and other public structures. It has been dubbed the Russian shorthand word for victory, according to sources at CNN. One thing to note is that Z doesn't necessarily have a singular homogeneous ideology. The letter has been worn by Russian communists, white supremacists, and ordinary citizens alike. Most recently, it has been branded by a 20-year-old Russian gymnast Ivan Kuliak, directly after his loss to a Ukrainian gymnast. This image is drawing similar parallels to the Nazi salute at the 1936 Summer Olympics in Berlin. This Z moniker has drawn many parallels to the Nazi swastika from historians and psychologists. Arik Toller, director of research and training at Bellingcat, suggests that the model for Z has smart marketing implications as well.
It's almost certainly some kind of tactical grouping. Like, there's a million different theories about what the Z means, but I think it's just a marking, just easy easy thing to mark, just like a square or triangle.
Z, a letter that is not even featured in the Russian alphabet, has managed to become the symbol of an unlawful invasion of a sovereign country. Even given its context of war, the letter has been donned in even darker contexts than what has previously been mentioned. For example, one image trending out of Russia in the city of Kazan this weekend showed terminally ill Russian children and their caregivers standing in this Z formation in the cold snow outside their hospice, a clear and dark propaganda effort. This war is still very much in its infant stage. It is impossible to predict what other means of propaganda can be expected on the Russian front. However, this is yet the latest to do so. For Annenberg Media, I'm Matthew Andrade.
This weekend kicks off spring break, and many are excited to be able to spend a week away from the lecture halls. After countless hours of studying and midterm preparation, spring break is exactly what USC students need. Students across campus are ready for a week of relaxation and fun. Joanna Bauerdorf has more on how USC students are planning to spend their spring break.
After an eventful first half of the spring semester, spring break is less than a week away. From a fully online academic start to mask mandates being lifted, USC has been through it all, and this break is much needed. Jason Carr, a freshman spring admit studying business administration, discusses his plans for the break.
For spring break, I just plan on going home. I feel like it'll be a nice opportunity to just reset and get all of the stress out of my system.
Freshman Supriya Subramanian, an electrical engineering major, plans on staying on campus during break.
I'm definitely planning on staying back and hanging out with some of my local friends here, possibly going to Universal, but we'll see what happens.
Rachel Rosenblatt, a sophomore studying public policy, has plans to travel with USC students.
I'm going to Hawaii with my roommates. I'm very excited for it. We're going for 6 days.
Students such as Oh Chung, a freshman studying political science, are eager for the break, as they feel it is a good opportunity to reset and catch up with off-campus opportunities.
I'm excited to have a week of no school. I think this is a really well-placed break because I feel like a lot of internships and job opportunities for the summer are going to have like their applications being due around this time. So I think it'll be a good time to take a step away from school and more into like my real life.
The indoor mask mandate and testing policy have been lifted, and for students who have been fully vaccinated and following COVID guidelines, they are eager for the opportunity to safely travel again.
I feel pretty confident about it. We all are fully vaccinated, plus boosters, and most of us have had COVID pretty recently, so I feel like given that, we feel pretty comfortable.
With midterms coming to an end, many have been feeling study fatigue these last few weeks. While grateful for the time off, some feel as if a break extension could be beneficial for people's well-being.
I feel like we should have spring break be like a good month. I feel like I need a month off. I feel like I need time off from not just school, but people and also myself.
Overall, self-care time and stress relieving are crucial to maintaining a healthy student lifestyle. And across the board, this break is just what students need. No matter where you're going over break, make sure to stay safe and healthy, ready to kick off the second half of the semester on March 21st. For Annenberg Media, I'm Joanna Bauerdorf.
President Biden has alleged plans to sign an executive order later this week on cryptocurrency. The order would assign several federal agencies to investigate crypto and make steps towards its regulations. With us is Chris Opsina, a senior majoring in mechanical engineering, to discuss its implications. Chris, thank you so much for dropping by.
No, thank you guys for having me.
What is one of the biggest concerns with cryptocurrency? One of the biggest concerns is that it could be used to get around sanctions. This is especially relevant now as Russia has become the most sanctioned nation in the world due to its invasion of Ukraine. Will Russia be able to avoid sanctions using cryptocurrency?
Yeah, so I'm not really too sure more on like the security side or, you know, in terms of, you know, bypassing like any governmental like sanctions they might have like from like the UN or anyone else. What I would say is that this is an argument which has been brought about like many other times with people who are skeptical about like the future of cryptocurrency, that, you know, it could do certain things as like help facilitate money laundering or sending, you know, money to like terrorists or like for drug deals. And it is true that, you know, since it is, you know, a cryptographic, you know, code, which is, you know, blocked off from most people, you know, anybody who goes in, that's the whole essence of the blockchain, can't really take apart any of the information or change anything, and it's coded, and so you can't really see it any of the way through. So in that aspect, you could say that theoretically they could do something to get around it, but also at the same time, a lot of the information is public in the sense of you can look at different types of wallets and see how much money is being moved. There's a lot of people who do like trading of crypto and see like the big sharks, you know, or the whales, and they see where these assets are moving, and they're able to identify, you know, the biggest players on the market for Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, to say the least. So if a huge nation like Russia was really moving hundreds and hundreds of thousands of millions of rubles, you know, through one of these blockchains or like changing it in exchanges, I think it would be something which the government or other countries in the world would be able to catch on to. So just because of the scale, I'm not sure really how that would work and if it would be effective.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that's like a lot to think about.
Yeah, that's really fascinating because looking, like what you said about looking at where all the wallets are moving their money and whatnot, mm-hmm. I know that it would be so fascinating to see where all these great nations and these leaders are actually moving their currencies. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I think if people were to look at my wallet, they would just see that it's all going to Trader Joe's.
No.
Starbucks for me.
We are so banal and unoriginal. So one last question, though. One thing that is unique about cryptocurrency is that it's not at all reliant on any central authority, such as a government or a bank or any nation at all, in their ability to uphold or maintain it. Now, bearing this in mind, is regulating cryptocurrency even possible? And how do you see crypto changing if the U.S. wants to start regulating it?
Yeah, I'm not sure if regulating it is possible, and it has been spoken about, but a lot of people who I watch on YouTube, people who are more, you know, informed about this and really, you know, do it as their day job, aren't sure if it's just the correct idea in general, even if it was possible. There's a lot of other countries which are facilitating the use of crypto, and it's allowing their citizens to really like make different moves, you know, in order to really lift themselves out of, you know, like poverty or the middle class.
And you can listen to the rest of the interview on the Annenberg Media website. Derek Renfro composed our theme music, and that's all the time we have for today. I'm Colby Martin.
And I'm Temi Lara Odunsi. From all of us at Annenberg Radio, wherever you are, we'll hope you'll join us again for...
From Where We Are.